And welcome to this month's episode of the Sharing Economy, where we learn about the challenges of scaling the share economy with amazing author and champion of workplace growth and development, Julie Winkle Giuliani. Julie has championed workplace growth and development for decades. She operates on the belief that everyone deserves the opportunity to reach their potential, and she works with organizations and leaders who want to make that happen. She is the president of Barrett Kohler Authors, Inc., and has written two books, including Promotions Are So Yesterday, Redefining Career Development, Help Employees Thrive, and she co-authored the international bestseller, Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go. Career Conversations Organizations Need and Employees Want, which has been translated into 7 languages. The third language will be available this month, September 24th, 2024. Julie also leads Design Arounds, a firm that offers bespoke, I want to learn more about that, development experiences to Fortune 500 organizations worldwide. She has earned praise and awards from Human Resource Executive Magazine's Top 10 Training Products, the New York Film Festival, Brandon Hall, and the Global HR Excellence Council. So this is Peter Neuwirth's show. He is an amazing actuary and author of 2 books himself from Barrett Kohler, What's Your Future Worth? And Money Mountaineering. So I'm going to throw it over to Pete, who's going to have an amazing conversation with Julie. We're so glad you are all here. Take it away, Pete.
Well, thanks very much, Hope. And Julie, it's so great to see you. I mean, you and I have been working together for maybe 5 years or so on Barrett Kohler Authors, Inc., which is a group, which is a organization of authors who have had books published by Barrett Kohler. And that's a very, very unique organization. And Barrett Kohler is a very unique publishing company. And we're going to get into that and how Julie and I have tried to take concepts associated with the sharing economy and apply them to our organization, to this authors group. But before we get that, I need to know a little bit more about you, Julie, because even though we've worked together for 5 years and sat on numerous meetings and been at retreats, I really don't even know, you know, where you grew up and how you got so smart and wise and wrote such good books. So tell us a little bit about where you come from and how you got here.
I don't know. I kind of like being an enigma. Do I really want to pull back the curtain on that? You know, I'm kind of boring, to be honest with you. I'll just start with that because I am living in the same town, raising my kids in the same town I grew up in. I haven't gone far at all in the world. I grew up in South Pasadena. My mom had moved all over the world when she was growing up, and her commitment to herself was she wanted her kids to have a home. And so when I got ready to start kindergarten, she moved to South Pasadena with my dad, of course, my little brother, and made sure that we had that solid home base to go from kindergarten through high school. And then, you know, fast forward several years later, when I got ready to start my own family, my son was starting school. I just couldn't figure out a better place to go. And so I came right on back, and he and my daughter had some of the same teachers I had even going through the schools. And so South Pasadena is clearly my home. I had my first job way back when I was 15 years old. I taught modeling and charm to children. And I did it, you know, I was too young to actually get paid money. And so the retail store I worked for paid me in clothing. So I was the best dressed 15-year-old around. But it was just so fascinating to me. It really ignited my interest in learning. It was so fascinating to see how to get a message across to these little people in a way that would resonate and would cause them to want to stand up straight or turn the way I wanted or whatever it was. And that through line of fascination with learning has just, you know, kind of followed me through my career. I ended up teaching high school vocational education in the fashion merchandising and retail sales area. And then I was a department chair and a professor at a local university here in Southern California in fashion marketing before going back into industry in a couple of learning and development roles. And my last internal job was 24 years ago, so I'm pretty unemployable at this point. But the last real job that I had was with a company. It started out Zenger Miller, became Achieve Global, one of the largest training companies in the world. And I cut my consulting teeth there, getting to work with organizations around the US, really helping them figure out how to elevate the leadership, sales, and service levels in their organizations. And then I moved on into their product development department. I was the director of product development before I left there, getting to create and lead the teams that created these massive curricula that are would be used in organizations around the world. And so it was a kind of a weird little niche that I fell into there. 24 years ago, I traded the illusion of security for the illusion of freedom and went out on my own and have not looked back. It started out as hope to your kind of question in the introduction, a bespoke training company where we would work with primarily large corporate clients, creating commercial quality products, training products that could scale the world, but be absolutely tailored to the organization. And then 13 years ago or so, Pete, I met someone who's a colleague of yours from Barrett Kohler, Beverly Kay. And I was doing a project for her company, trying to help them rethink their flagship training program when the editor from Barrett Kohler, whom she had been working with for, gosh, I don't know how long, years and years and years, called and said, hey, Bev, it's time to write your next book. And Bev said, hey, Julie, you want to write a book with me? And I thought, sure, how hard can that be?
Wow. Every Barrett Kohler author has a slightly different story as to, you know, how they came to write a book. And many wrote a book and then built a consulting business out of that. But it sounds like you sort of did it the reverse. You came from the consulting and training and communication world. So did writing a book come naturally?
Writing is something that comes really naturally for me. It's how I think, you know, is through my fingers on a keyboard. And so I do write with ease. And of course, writing with Beverly was just, you know, joyful because of the energy and the experience that she brought. Writing piece of it wasn't hard. What I found to be more challenging was once I got the manuscript in, I'm thinking, phew, okay, got that off my plate. And then the next mountain, kind of playing off of your book title, Pete, the next mountain you have to scale is the whole marketing mountain. And that's where I really had a steep learning curve, as it were.
Yeah, well, I mean, many of us have. I mean, the whole notion of marketing and promoting yourself was pretty foreign to me when I wrote a book. I just, you know, I wrote a book and somebody said Barrett Kohler said they might want to publish it. And then, you know, one thing led to another. But I want to talk about that, about your book, because, you know, I actually came across your book before I met you, because I went to my first Barrett Kohler author retreat, and we'll talk more about retreats later, but in, I guess, 2015, and it was your co-author, Beverly Kay, who had, you know, shared some of those copies, and I took one and looked at it and was very taken and learned about foresight and hindsight and insight and all the kinds of conversations that you need to have with your employees if you want them to develop. But that was a while ago, and things have changed and the world has changed, and we'll talk more about those changes. But tell us a little bit about the book itself, and, you know, what's it about, and, you know, who's it for, and what does it say?
You know, the premise of the book is pretty simple, actually. It is that career conversation, career development is so much easier than most managers and leaders think. You know, we've layered on all sorts of activities and processes and systems and forms and all of that kind of stuff that has made over the years in a well-meaning, you know, organizations were well-meaning in all of that, but it's made career development feel like this heavy administrative burden for a lot of managers and leaders. And the truth is, at the end of the day, what we've come to understand is that development boils down to a relationship that plays out through conversation. So if we can help leaders simply understand it's not that hard, it's about the conversation. And if we just start talking, we can start the development process. makes all the difference in terms of the employee's experience. And so the book is written to managers, to leaders, to anyone who has a role in growing those around them. And it's really a how-to guide for stripping away the complexity and making this very human endeavor the human endeavor that it needs to be.
So I guess, I'm just sort of, this occurs to me just as you're talking. You're talking about these conversations between managers and their employees, but you know, a relationship of the employee to the organization is more than just the managers. So the conversations you're talking about in your book, is it just manager to employee, or is it managers to groups of employees? I mean, what are the conversations that you're actually talking about?
Yeah, you know, it really applies in any number of contexts. The primary context is I'm a manager, I'm a supervisor, I've got a team who desperately, we know they want to grow. The research is really clear that, you know, people are more inclined to stay if they feel like they're growing, they're more engaged if they're growing, your customers are more satisfied if they're growing. And so the initial context is, as a manager, I want to offer opportunities to grow to the people around me, and career conversations are a vehicle for making that happen. Now, that said, we've got like 100 plus questions in the third edition. All of those questions would be great for a manager or leader to ask him or herself, for a manager or leader to take to their boss, for their boss to bring out and facilitate conversations organizationally to create that culture of development. So it's a pretty flexible system, but I guess the starting point really is that relationship between the manager and the employee. And if we can get that right, we know that a lot of the other pieces kind of fall into
place.
Well,
it sounds like you're suggesting that, I mean, the conversations you're talking about sound like almost mentorship kind of conversation. So, I mean, how does what you're talking about relate to mentorship within an organization?
Yeah, you know, frequently mentorship is conducted by someone who's not necessarily the boss of the employee. So it's like a third point of contact, somebody who doesn't have a vested, you know, interest in what's going on there. Of course, they've got an interest. I don't mean it that way, but a 1 degree separation interest. And so they have maybe a little bit more objectivity and that sort of thing than the manager. But, you know, the same kinds of questions really apply. And it strikes me, you know, the work, so much of the work that you do around the sharing economy, it strikes me that this really aligns nicely with that. Because what we're talking about is the sharing of information, attention, care, support. I think at its core, career development, whether you're talking about a manager doing it with an employee or a mentor or a coach, it really is very much based in the sharing that you talk so much about.
Right. It's sharing of the resources of the manager has maybe access to, or the organization has access to, for the benefit of the employee. So it almost sounds like you're saying, well, managers just need to change the way they manage to be more mentoring. But it does sound like you're breaking down some resistance that managers would normally have to such conversations.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. I think the position that we're advocating is that leaders, really effective leaders who build sustainable organizations, tend to be the ones who lead with development. Development is a natural part of day-to-day interactions, who aren't waiting for HR to say it's that time of the year, go, you know, off to your corners and have your conversation. But they're the ones who are picking up on the cues and engaging in this kind of thread of development day in and day out. And so the leaders who are able to do that are able to grow their folks and, of course, grow the organization in the process. What we find in the case of those who don't tend to lead with development and find the time and make that commitment, they typically share a couple of, you know, challenges or pushback. One is time. when Bev and I first wrote the book, we did some research, and 3 to 1, time is the number one reason managers and leaders gave for not doing career development. And what that really tells me is people aren't defining career development in a way that's doable in today's environment, because who's going to argue managers don't have time? None of us have time. A career development can be one well-chosen question asked with curiosity, with a little bit of space around it for someone to answer, with the spirit of care and benevolence, and you're doing career development. You're doing it piece by piece. You're layering a little bit on itself over time. The result of that is actually more authentic and more meaningful and drives greater engagement than that once a year, I got to have that conversation, check it off the list sort of cadence.
Well, it also sounds much more human. You were reacting to with your first book, or the book, the first edition of the book, is that companies and organizations have all these systems and forms, and if you check this box and achieve this metric or pass this test, then you're on your way to career development. And that's just not the way development works. It's a more human process.
You are so right. And I don't want to diminish the efforts of those in human resources who have put these processes in place, because many of them need to be there from a manpower planning, a succession planning sort of standpoint. And it's an effort to ensure compliance, to ensure that managers are doing what they ought to be doing. And yet what we know in many cases is that compliance and commitment aren't necessarily the same thing. And so how do we make sure that the systems are, you know, that people are checking the right boxes and the organization has the information it needs to make good human resource decisions, but how do we have then managers really leading with their hearts and making career development an organic part of their interactions?
Right. I think it would be an understatement to say that the world has changed in the last 5 years since the second edition of your book came out. And so how have those changes informed what this edition is going to say? I mean, we were talking before I got on that, you know, we now have a new generation, these Gen Z folks who are, you know, fully in the workforce, as opposed to the millennials who used to be the kind of the newbies in the company. So you've got another generation, another set of cultural divides. And how does this new edition address all those changes?
Yeah. I mean, you're so spot on. We have the most diverse workforce that we've ever had, with spanning so multiple generations. We've got a level of ambiguity and uncertainty that exceeds what we have operated with in the past. We've got emerging skill gaps that offer tremendous threat, actually, to organizations and industries, but also individuals and their ability to ensure a livelihood. We've got engagement at an 11-year low. Employees are not engaged with their work the way they might have been in the past. There's AI. We've got customer expectations, stakeholder expectations that are off the charts, and organizations that are really struggling with, you know, retention and recruiting the talent that they need.
And you didn't mention they're not coming in the office either.
And then, yes, we've been scattered to the four corners of the globe, haven't we? Yeah, so, and it's interesting, Pete, that you should bring this up, because when we were asked to write the third edition, my first reaction was, that last edition is pretty evergreen, you know, development, having these conversations, I mean, we're still human beings talking. But when I stepped back and I looked at it, sure, the skills are the same, but the context is entirely different. And the stakes today are so much greater as well. And so that was what really informed the adjustments that we made to the third edition, is to raise the stakes, help people understand the business case for doing this, as well as the human case behind it, And then what are some of the nuances now? You know, with AI, for instance, you know, we all think it's going to come in and either take our job or, you know, take all the ugly parts of our job. And, you know, who knows what it's ultimately going to do. But there is kind of a tendency, especially on the part of perhaps leaders who aren't as comfortable with conversation, to think, oh, well, you know, maybe technology can help with that. Let's automate, you know, some of that stuff. When we know that, you know, AI is no match for what we refer to in the book as HI, the human interactions. And so we double down on that. In the new edition, we also talk a lot about psychological safety, which is so much more, you know, on everyone's minds today, given the level of burnout and stress and lack of wellness in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And so as leaders, you know, when you think about development, there is nothing more intimate than mucking around in people's hopes and dreams and aspirations. Right. And that's got to happen within the context of psychological safety. Mm-hmm. And so what are the behaviors that leaders can bring to the relationship that will earn them the right, basically, to get to have those conversations?
Yeah, sounds like you got a winner there. And I guess it'll be a three in a row or four in a row, because you got another book that you wrote before. But I want to talk a little bit about our authors group, because, you know, you and I have published our books with Barrett Kohler, which is a pretty unique organization and has what I find a unique relationship with its authors. I mean, Barrett Kohler, once you sign a contract with Barrett Kohler, you become a Barrett Kohler author, and you automatically become a member of the BK Authors Inc. And Julie, can you tell us a little bit about who BK Authors Inc. is and what that's all about and what we're trying to do with it?
Thank you for asking too, Pete, because this is something I could talk about forever. You know, when I was invited to co-author the book with Beverly, it was a bucket list project. Who doesn't aspire to, you know, putting your name on a book someday? I had no idea of the additional gifts that I was going to receive as a result of doing this work. So first of all, maybe just stepping back before we talk about the authors, Barrett Kohler Publishers is a pretty remarkable organization. The mission of BK Publishers, and I want to read it just so I get the words right, connecting people and ideas to create a world that works for all. And, you know, it's an organization that absolutely does not just put those words on a website, but rather lives them day in and day out. The commitment that everybody to a person, the folks at Barrett Kohler Publishers make, is remarkable. And so then by extension, what's really amazing is, as a Barrett Kohler author, you become part of this group, this family of people who share the experience of having published a book under the BK banner, who share a commitment to creating a world that's going to work better for all, and who are, I think, you know, Pete, in large part, I think because of your efforts, who are practicing this idea of a sharing economy, who come together with the express reason to support one another in this hard work of improving the world.
Yeah.
And okay.
Well, what I was going to say, you know, the reason I'm so passionate about it is, you know, my house burned down 4 years ago, and I became homeless for the first time. And it was a blessing because I became part of a community here in Santa Rosa where many, many people have lost their homes. And it's a very tight-knit community that supports each other. And they support each other by sharing. They share, you know, resources that they have that they don't use all the time, and they can lend to others, and it works. And what I found is that this sharing economy works well when it's local and the people are connected and share an affinity. And what was fascinating and intriguing to me is to whether that could be leveraged and applied to a community like the Barrett Kohler authors, which is not geographically located, but, you know, all Barrett Kohler authors have this connection to each other and maybe a shared culture and a shared value. And there's an affinity there. And to me, that's what's necessary to make a sharing economy work. And maybe you can talk a little bit about some of the initiatives that we've started and how they're working.
So I'm just thinking that even our conversation here is just a beautiful example of the sharing economy that operates within Barrett Kohler Authors. You heard that we had the third edition out and you called and said, hey, I've got a podcast. We'd like to be a guest on it. I mean, that is just, and it warms my heart to have those kinds of relationships and opportunities. And you know, I would do whatever you needed to support your efforts as a result. So it's been just, I think Barrett Kohler Authors is proof of concept that you can scale on a virtual level when you've got that shared culture and that sense of almost, you know, intentionality around the members. So as Barrett Kohler Authors as an organization, you know, our goal really is to facilitate these connections and the ability for each of us to support one another and reach our goals. And so we found that years ago that one of the things that we all struggle with as authors, you know, the writing is easy, but marketing, not so much for many of us. And so we put on a low-cost marketing workshop every year that's virtual now that we invite authors from within and outside of the Barrett Kohler community to join and really hear the latest and greatest, you know, what are the cutting edge techniques. And it's amazing because we'll go back, people go back year after year after year. And you think, how much has changed in a year? A lot. You know, there are always evolving techniques and that kind of thing. And the relationships and the support that come out of that is remarkable. Mm-hmm. We also have this annual retreat that is just such a gift. It's a, you know, in-person event, it rotates around the United States, where authors are invited to come together for 4 days and 3 nights to dialogue on a variety of different topics. And I should probably pause here and let you talk, because Pete, you've been to more retreats than I have. What's your experience?
The retreat is where it all, I think that's the sort of the glue that often binds, you know, the authors to each other and to the organization. But what I was thinking in terms of the kind of sharing that we do, when you have a virtual, and when you have people just, you know, all over the country, you can't share meals, you can't share pots and pans, you can't share. What you have to share is something like, you know, services, knowledge, expertise. And that's something that, you know, the authors have in abundance and have been, like I said, generous and willing to share with others. And so I'm thinking of that. What is that something Inc?
Fresh Inc. Yeah. It's
Fresh Inc. That's what it is.
Initiative this year. And I think it too is really a great example of this sharing in operation. It's four times a year, we bring new authors together and give them an opportunity to talk about their books. And other authors and others for that matter will come together, we'll listen, we have this rich Q&A. You walk away just feeling so darn smart. And we offer books to people. So these new books get in people's hands. And the ask is leave an Amazon review. You know, if you like the book, leave an Amazon review, because that makes all the difference in terms of new books. Those, you know, anyone who's listening out there, if you like a book, do an Amazon review. It's a game changer for authors. And that's just been another way that we've seen authors helping other authors and creating these deep ties as people realize, oh my gosh, you know, I kind of work in that space too, or that's a hole in my practice. And to see the connections that are being made there is really gratifying.
Yeah. Well, we're starting to run out of time here. And, but again, I think what you've shown by example and through your leadership of the Barrett Kohler authors, is that the sharing economy can work for a community. You got to have a community, a relatively small community, where there's a lot of connections and similarities in values and culture, which maybe is the case in corporations and companies that you work with their employee development. It's possible, and it's so maybe it can't scale up to the United States of America, but it certainly can scale up from a little town here in a Sonoma County up to a national network of authors. So any final words you have about either the authors, the sharing economy, or your new book? And again, for those listening, it's help them grow or watch them go.
You know, I guess the closing thought is, it harkens back to the opening one, career development doesn't have to be hard. It really boils down to conversation, intentional conversation, with the intention to support somebody moving toward, you know, forward and toward whatever their goals might be. And our aspiration with the book is to offer leaders and managers the tools they need to approach this increasingly important and always transformative skill with greater ease. And with this new edition, we're also including an additional tool. We call it the BookBot, but it's a custom GPT AI-powered tool resource that readers can go to, because one of the things that can be challenging is, it's one thing to read something and have a good intention, it's another thing to actually do it. Mm-hmm. And so the BookBot will bridge that knowing-doing gap by giving people a place where they can go and input information and get a plan for how they might want to approach a conversation with an employee. It allows for you to actually rehearse a conversation with an employee and get some feedback, assess your skills, brainstorm development activities, all sorts of things that just make it that much easier to do what most leaders come to that role wanting to do, which is to develop and grow those around them.
Julie, thank you so much for being on there. And everybody, you know, go out and buy that book. Well, you can't buy it yet.
You can pre-order it as many as you want. Yeah.
Pre-order it. Don't write a review until you read it, though. Again, the book is Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go. And thanks so much for being here.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Julie Winkle Giuliani and Peter Neuwirth, host of the Sharing Economy Show. It's a pleasure to talk to you both. What I've said before is that you are just coming from your hearts, and that is so important and spectacular in this day and age where we're so focused on making money. But everyone wants to be an author, and you two are really shining stars in that world. So BK, check it out. Barrett Kohler, they're an awesome publisher. I'm Hope Katz-Gibbs, proud producer of the show on the Incandescent Radio Network and Incandescent TV. Thank you so much, Pete. Thank you so much, Julie. And everyone, stay tuned for more episodes of The Sharing Economy with Peter Neuwirth, FSA, FCA. We'll see y'all soon.